time has come again. The champion must end. 이긴 오늘 배워는 us. Victoria. Hello there, everybody out there in Dimwind Nation. I am here with your favorite podcast. This is the DYM podcast. I am your one of your co-hosts, Dutch, aka Sean Donnelly, here with the cool breeze himself, probably the biggest hockey fan I know, Andrew Fiore. How are you, my friend?
Heidi ho, neighbor. How you doing there, Dutch Booth?
I'll explain why I'm done. I gotta know. Yours says Jello for today on the StreamYard stream. Do you want to explain why you're Jello for today?
Yeah, sure. I have a couple different nicknames, and if I mentioned this on the pod before, I apologize.
But I don't remember this one.
So I basically am a very lucky man when it comes to friendships. I have a bunch of comedy friends, as you and I share. I have a great group of college friends, and I also, you know, you and I, we both grew up in the same area. Not the same area, but this surrounding tri-state area. Yes. I have hometown friends, too, and I'm all still very close with them. And I also kind of have new city friends that you make when you move to New York. And as you know, I've been going to a bar called O'Hanlon's for many, many years now.
Yes, you're basically a stool.
I'm basically a stool. I'm a bar fly, literally. And as you get to know the other barflies, you guys all start to create your own nicknames within that group. So Jello is one that was given to me by our mutual friend from your area where you grew up in, Mr. Dan Sweeney, who is the owner and proprietor of 11th Street Bar in the East Village, who, might I add, is a very big dimwit.
Yes, he listens to the show.
And which goes into my thing that I have to say right after this nickname, which is why I chose this as my moniker for this week's episode. So back in the day, it was maybe, let's say, 2005, 6 or 7, around there. Dan and I, becoming good friends, we realized that we actually met in college at one point randomly. And so we become drinking buddies. And we actually ended up bartending at St. Mark's Ale House together for a while. So one night we were at O'Hanlon's and we were getting pretty into it. And
a couple of Chardonnays. What else?
I don't know. He had a few Chardonnays. I don't know if you know this about me, Sean, but when I get a few in me, I don't like to sit. I like to stand at a bar. I like to stand in a group, break balls. Yes. I don't like sitting down. I don't know what it is.
Well, here's the thing. I know that about you because I am the same exact freaking way. Yeah. I would rather, like, I get uncomfortable. People be like, let's get a table. And I'm always like, I don't want to get a table.
Yeah, let's
I don't
want
to do
around.
It. Come like on, let's stand up. Let's go to group to group. Let's work the room, baby.
So I was exceptionally drunk one night, and Dan just goes, "Hey, well, why did you sit down, bro?" And I go, "I'm a stander. I don't like sitting, you know."
Yeah.
And he goes, "Well, you should sit down. You're moving back and forth like a bowl of Jello right now." And
you were like, well, 2 seconds from just falling on your ass.
Yeah,
just blacked out drunk. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Andy Jello kind of stuck as a barfly nickname. For years, still to this day, within some of that crowd, I will walk in. People will go, Jello, Jelly.
Get out of here.
Yeah, they'll go, Jello.
So another thing that you're touching on is a nickname surviving.
So like nickname survival.
This nickname survival is actually really tricky. Like it really has to be. Like I think I've told you. Sorry, you know, finish your story, but go ahead. Was that the end? That's why you're called Jello. That's what you're saying.
Well, that's the origin of it. But yeah, I will still get. So I went in and visited our friend Dan last Friday. I had a spot early, and then I said, I'm off for the rest of the night. Let me go hang out with my buddy. I don't get to see him that much because, you know, the last year, because he's been working his ass off. Go to 11th Street Bar and support these small businesses.
It's a great bar.
Oh, it's a great bar. And so I find Dan. He goes, oh, perfect timing, Jill. I just finished wrapping up my work for the day. Let's have a few cocktails and we'll sit and we'll catch up like old times. And here's the thing. He's such a big dimwit. He knows all my life events already. So I'm going, hey, but here's something new. I haven't seen my buddy in a couple months, but he listens every week.
Yeah.
I'm going,
yeah.
Oh, dude. So I went there. He goes, yeah, I know. I hear. Yeah. I heard. And I go, damn, I have no topics of conversation with this guy.
There's no element of surprise.
Yeah. Like three times I was like, oh, did I tell you this? I went over there. He goes, yeah, I heard it on the pod. God damn it. I just will shut up and drink then, I guess.
Everybody on the planet should just have a pod. It's a way to keep being in touch with friends without having to, like, talk to them or something.
Yeah.
That's pretty funny. He, really good dude. I'll just say this.
Yeah, you guys went to high school together.
We did. He was, I think, a year ahead of me. But we didn't. I knew who he was. I think it was his. I think we talked about this before, but I'll mention it again. Either his uncle or his grandfather owned LP Sweeney Auto, which was right near me. And that's where my dad went.
BK Sweeney's?
What? BK Sweeney's. But I think also his family member owned that place. And I think he heard this at one point and he told you what the real story was. But I'm pretty sure they're related. And my dad loved the guy. The guy Sweeney loved him. And he would only take our cars to the Sweeney place because of how good of a guy the guy was. So that's what I think of every time I think of Dan, because I'm pretty sure they're related. And yes, unless I made that up in my head, and I'm sure he'll tell you because he might hear this episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I will say 11th Street Bar. I want to go there more because I frequent bars and places with libations, and 11th Street Bar is a place that, like, I should hang out at, but I just never got around to it.
It was built for you.
Yeah, really, yeah.
It's just got, it's that old, it's got, it's like that wooden, it's that oak, that perfect Irish bar. It's a good, drinking, you know, you ask for a shot of Jameson, they give you a half a fucking pint of booze, you know, one of those things. It doesn't come in a shot glass. It comes in a fucking thermos. It's fucking great.
Yeah, it's a great,
you know, one of the best Guinness's pints I've ever had. You know, they belong to that, like, perfect pour club where guy from Guinness came and, like, judged, you know, the taste and the pour and the look and the sexiness of it.
The curves of the Guinness. Yeah.
He goes,
the cook of the Guinness. It's cooking.
To Guinness, me.
That's what they do when they pour. I kind of like that. I don't know if bartenders think it's corny or not, but, and you would know, you used to bartend when people go, they'd be like, hey, you got my Guinness? And, like, it's cooking, because they pour half and they wait and then they put the other half.
It's on the kettle.
And you know what? I'll do this. I will make a declaration right now. I haven't had a Guinness in a long time, a very long time.
Really?
When the next Guinness I have will be at 11th Street Bar.
I like it. We'll have a Dimwit Nation gathering if you want.
Yes, it'll be us.
Come down, have a pint with Dimwit Dan. He's the leader, I'm assuming it's okay with him. But
yeah, he'll be there, and Daniel Poon, and that's about it. That's the only two.
I actually haven't had a Guinness in a while either, just because the summer months. It's not really a summer beverage. You're just going, all right, like, I'm eating a fucking meat and potatoes meal here.
It is like having a loaf of bread.
Weather.
Yeah, exactly. Here we go. There's the
any bartender now. Mikey Suarez, old Buster Palm himself, just pulled up a, I guess, how to enjoy the perfect pint. And any bartender who pours a Guinness worth his salt is going to know how to do this. Yes, you tilt the glass, you pour it about 3/4 way, and you let it settle, and then you finish her off, and you even got to let that settle, the cascade. I've seen so many people get handed their Guinness and they go right to chug it and go, whoa, 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 whoa. Let that baby rest for a second. Which is kind of hard to do, because sometimes I've been on dates before and I've gotten a Guinness, and which is a bad move because I just give a fucking milk mustache and it's sexy.
And you just bloated during the date?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this goes, hey, cheers, nice to meet you. I go, I actually have to wait for my beer to be ready for. Sorry, ma'am. Cheers you yet.
Yeah, yeah. I drink so much beer. I have to get the one that I know that I wait. Like, it's like, that's like such an alcoholic move to go. Normally, like, if I would just drink the beer, but I drink so much, I know that I have to wait for this beer.
Right, right. I'm sorry, ma'am. I have to wait for my beer to settle. You have real pretty hair.
I'm on a date with two ladies tonight, yeah. And one of those ladies' name is Guinness.
You're real pretty, almost as pretty as this plant.
Almost as pretty as this brunette right here. I'm on a date with two brunettes tonight.
That's an old great John Fish joke about dating apps. He'd go, yeah, you ever see some girl that you think is cute, but then she posts too many pictures with her friends? She's like, yeah, you're cute, but who is that in your photo? I did the joke all wrong, but.
I get it.
I see that so many times on these dating apps where you see this one girl and you go, but who's the one on the left? You know?
Yeah. I always feel bad when I think that way, but you know, it's like, right. What are you going to do? I was going to say, but you did bring up a good thing, which is nickname survival. I was nickname curious survival. Because I have one that popped into my brain when you kind of mentioned it, which is my friend Mike, this guy Mike from Long Island. His nickname was Booger for it's the longest lasting nickname survival I've ever seen in my life. It was like 30 years, like a long time.
What happened?
And now he got to be like 35 and not 35, like probably 40 or even less than that. He died. Yeah, he died. And
the nickname moves on. Booger does not.
But the thing about it is it was such a universal nickname. I knew him through skateboarding. Everybody on the island knew him as Booger. Yeah, I didn't know. This is one of these nicknames that I didn't know the first name of this guy for the first 6 years I knew him, like that kind of thing, right? And but it's only reason I went by the wayside is because he's like, hey, I can't be being called Booger when I'm 40 fucking years old, and it's true. He's right, and nobody.
Well, I have one of those too. My buddy Beef. He's my accountant. He's my financial advisor.
Yeah, Beef, but
that's a childhood. He had buck teeth when he was a kid. So his three older brothers started calling him Beaver, and still to this day in our early 40s are calling the Beaver.
And how long? But so
a little bit, a little easier to stomach than Booger though. Booger's just a little.
Yeah,
tougher.
That's the thing. Yeah, Beaver is like because also like if you walked into his work one day, you're not going to be like Beaver. Yeah. Like he's in a meeting, and you walk in, you're like, you fucking teeth. Like just that's not gonna happen. You know.
So we got the reports back. It looks like we're a little down this quarter. Beaver, you want to walk us through this?
If you want to walk us through that, that's funny.
Here's the other thing, though, too. Most females don't use the Beeve's nickname. They usually his wife calls him Ryan, and like all our moms will call him Ryan. None of like the moms in college called him Beaver. They would always be like, how's Ryan doing? I go, who? Oh, Beeve. Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah, that usually is the way that it goes. Girls don't want to be involved in nicknames, and parents. It's probably a rule they can't be because it's like you can't familiarize yourself that much with a kid to be like, hey, Beaver, come on over, well, Beaver.
You know what's funny? Also, in a weird way, it's not really nicknamey, but I think you and I are the same. Like I call people all sorts of different things. I like to add wise, like Shawnee. I like to add, I like to pluralize things for people's names, There's or add like a boy, Tommy boy. Like I come from that generation. I think it's from my dad. Is he came up in that generation, the World War II greatest generation. They all did that. Like they all had Nick. Like he would tell me crazy stories of World War II. He'd be like, "So I was in the foxhole with Mouse Turner," and dude, I'm not making that name up. That's an actual name my dad told me.
Yeah,
that's a real person.
The only difference is you're going to you're calling those people that you're writing comments on Instagram with the nicknames and your dad was like, I saw him die in front of me. I had to tell his family that he was gone. Like it's just like he's going
I had to deliver
the door.
A gold watch to his infant son, Butch.
Holy shit.
So my point being is that my dad immediately like the one classic example we have in my group of friends was my friend James Panapinto was not big on nicknames, but I mean, we call him Pinto, obviously. Panapinto. So, but
Animal
he
House.
Does not like it if you stray from James, like there's no Jim, there's no Jamie, There's no variation of James. He hates it. But my dad would do it no matter what, just because when James would come over, he'd go, "Hey, Jim, how you doing, buddy? Hey, get over here, Jim. How you doing? Let's hang out." And
yeah,
he would obviously let it go because it was my dad, but nobody else. So I think I do the same thing, and I revert to that. Like, a lot of our friends in comedy go by their full names. Like, you know, it'll be like, say there's a guy named Michael. I'll immediately be like, "Hey, Mikey, how you doing, Mikey?" You know, I just immediately jump to the most informal version of your name.
Well, that I'll do that with our friend Robert Dean. I was roommates with him for a while. I call him Bobby Dean. I go, "Where's Bob?" And the people are like, "What are you talking about? What are you talking about?" Because he goes by Robert officially for most part, but I've known him and I like going, "Hey, Bob," and I think he likes the Bob Dean thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah. We have a whole bunch. Yeah, Pinto, Brownie, McQuinte, Quince. Then there's nicknames within nicknames, which gets even crazier.
Yeah, We just had so many Mikes and so many Johns that we had only like last name things. Yeah. And then we had
the last names are big. I go Fiore is probably what I get called the most.
Fiore. I would get called Donnelly. I would get called Sean John a lot. That was a thing because yeah, I grew up in the '90s and there was, that's yeah. Nasty. I always wished I had like a nickname. I never really did.
Yeah. I tried to make AJ happen one year in Little League, and it was just like, yeah, I'd be like, "Call me AJ now," because my, you know, Andrew Joseph's, but like, it's technically true, but it just wasn't me. It's not my personality.
I'll tell you where you went wrong.
No personality.
I'll tell you where it went wrong. You can't give yourself the nickname. That's right. Where you went. Yeah, right. Like somebody has to christen you the nickname. You know what I do now because I'm becoming an old man. And I always like this. It's an Irish thing, but if somebody's name is Mike, I'll say, "Where's Mick?" I like Mick. Like my friend's dad, my friend Mike Regan, his dad would call him Mick. I always thought that was cool and pretty personal to be like, "Mick," like whatever it is. Like, "Where's Mick? How's Mick?" Like, yeah, that kind sure. Of, I think I like that a lot. Anyway, it actually
Buster,
makes sense.
Buster Palm, aside from BP, did you ever have a nickname growing up, Mikey?
Not growing up. Liz calls me Mush.
Mush, oh yeah.
Oh, Mushy,
we
yeah.
Get away from
oh,
Mush because Buster Palm is such a soft spot.
But she's not the only one that calls you Mush, right?
I mean, when I first started hearing it, I slapped it on right away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, she's the one.
I'll even got, that's my thing. I go, "Mush." I go, "Hey, Mushy." I even like, I add a nickname to a nickname. I go, "Mushy, what up, Mushy?"
And you know what Mush is from? Mush is from Bronxdale. Remember the guy, if he's coming down and he'd been on the same horse as Chaz Palminteri and them, and they just throw their tickets away because it's the Mush. Anything he puts, right. Anything he bets on,
where
loses.
Liz has made it.
No, I don't think that's where she got
he's
it.
He's just an asshole. Is there an explanation? It was like, why?
No, when she met me, Bobby told her my name, and she's like, "I'm just going to call him Mush."
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. What is she, in the mafia? But it actually makes sense that you, I don't know if everybody caught it, but Andrew Fiore just dropped a little Pulp Fiction reference. That's true. And it's very fitting because I just got done listening to the armchair expert Dax Shepard interview with Quentin Tarantino. And there was a couple little tidbits in there that I thought were really cool. He was on there because he's promoting, he wrote a novelization of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. I don't think, maybe we mentioned it, but he's been promoting it. So all these articles have been coming out. We mentioned the Steve Buscemi thing that it's probably Mr. Pink who plays Buddy Holly in Pulp Fiction.
That's great.
But he didn't mention, they didn't attend to that at all. But the reason I called up, made my name Dutch Booth is because they mention Cliff Booth a lot from once, you know, Brad Pitt's character Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And at one point, Quentin Tarantino was like, any dude would love to be as cool and as put together and as like control as Cliff Booth. And I'm like, yeah, totally. 100%. Like,
forget in control and cool. Just give me his looks and I'll make all the rest work.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
How about that?
But he's also such a badass in the movie, and he brought up He brought up a great point about exposition. Tarantino was talking about in his movies, he hates exposition. He likes to hide the exposition in a 20-minute scene of people just talking, and he wants to put it in there without you knowing about it, right? Yeah. So I was like, that's interesting. I was trying to think of examples, and then he gave an amazing one about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because earlier in the episode, they mentioned even how cool the scene is where Cliff Booth gets home, and he's just feeding the dog, and the dog's trained. And Dax Shepard was like, yeah, I guess exposition-wise, I thought of that scene being about Cliff Booth and showing you how cool he is or whatever it is. Sure. And Quentin Tarantino was like, no, that was exposition about how trained the dog is. Mm-hmm. So if he would have, if you would have had the last scene in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood where the dog is so trained and is not whining when the guys people come in and not barking and not doing anything, you'd have been like, what's with this dog? Why is it so amazing?
Yeah, yeah.
But because he gave you that one scene in the trailer, you were like, oh yeah, this totally fits. But you don't realize he's doing it. It's just kind of like a slice of life scene. Like they're not telling you, hey, they're foreshadowing without you really realizing their foreshadowing. It's like that kind of
love a relationship between a man and his hound. I think I'm due for a rewatch. I think enough time has passed.
On Once Upon a Time, I watched
it around Thanksgiving time last year, maybe. So maybe I'm due for a review.
It's so good. It's so good. And I'll tell you another thing that I was reading about, because now, of course, on my news feed, there's all these articles about it because he's been doing so much promo about it, right? Tarantino. Another, the girl who plays the child actor in it, where they have that scene together when he's filming the Western TV show. Apparently, there was a scene between Leonardo DiCaprio and her on a phone call. And some other director or somebody who saw the scene said that if he put that in the movie, that little girl would have gotten a Best Supporting nomination for an Oscar.
Really? Because she is fantastic.
She's fantastic.
We were misquoting him for about 4 months there before the movie.
I know.
I still think our version is better.
I think it's so much better. I think it's so much funnier.
To put this in context for the people who haven't been with us the whole way. So when the trailer for Once Upon a Time in America came out, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Yeah. What? Yeah. Hollywood. A lot of Once Upon a Times. They show the little girl whispering into Leonardo DiCaprio's ear. She goes, what's his name in the movie? You're Rick.
Rick Dalton.
She goes, you're Rick Dalton. That's a great fucking note. Which is funny.
She walks up to him after the scene and she whispers in his ear and says, that was the greatest acting I've ever seen in my life. And he goes, thank you. And she walks away and he cries. And what he really says is Rick fucking Dalton, right? Which is a great line, but we thought he said, that's a great fucking note.
which I think is better.
I think it's better. I think it's a better line.
Funnier. It's such a funny thing, and that's kind of a thing that character would say.
Same here. I think it totally fits the character. Absolutely. So in that vein, that little girl, apparently there was a... She's going to play somebody in some other movie coming up. I forget what it is.
She was very good.
She's amazing, and apparently this scene that got left out of the movie...
Oh, I hate to hear that.
Yeah, but also the reasoning, because I'm reading this article going, then why would they leave it out? And apparently it didn't fit the timeline of the movie. When they sat down and they edited the movie, they go, what is it? That's August. When he's filming that, that's August. When August is done, August is done. Then they go to September or October, whenever it was after the Italian stuff. So he goes, I guess there's been multiple times where they have these great scenes and they put them by the wayside because it doesn't fit the vibe or the beats or the timeline of the movie, which is why these things end up being so brilliant, because it's not like, it's so funny. I don't know if I'd have that brain as if I was a filmmaker. I don't know if I'd have,
well, that's why saying it, you know, how long have these movies already been? Cause it's like you said, we've said it before. It's hard to cut shit.
Yeah, right.
I'm sure Tarantino knew it was a brilliant performance. I'm sure it was heartbreaking to have to leave it on the floor of the editing room, as they say, you know?
Apparently, after every take, they would just be crying. Both actors would be crying.
Somebody, dimwits, try and find that footage. Go dig it up if we can.
I wonder if he'll put it out. If they do the four-hour one on Netflix, I wonder if it'll come as an extra.
Yeah.
Or if it'll be in there, maybe, if he redoes the editing, which I don't know if he would do that, but...
How about Dax Shepard? I've never really been a fan of that guy.
I'm not a huge fan, and to be honest, I think the interview is fine, but I guess Dax Shepard does a lot of directing now, so he does give the warning, you know, like he gives the thing of saying, "Hey, I'm not pretending that I'm on the same page, same par with you." But when I'm directing but even with that, I was like, "Yeah, don't even put it in a camaraderie type." Asking the question, like, don't even do that.
There was a while there where he was in stuff, and I'd be like, "Yeah, I'm tired of you." And then like him and Kristen Bell would be popping up, and I'd go, "Ah, I'm done with this couple. They're too ubiquitous."
It's like Quentin Tarantino made Pulp Fiction. You were on Punk'd, okay, Dax Shepard?
Yeah.
You were on the first iteration of Punk'd. Let's relax. Let's totally relax. Because even at one point, like, Tarantino, when you listen to him, he's so genuine and he's such a fanboy of movies that he's spitting out facts about movies with no pretense whatsoever. And Dax Shepard just kind of comes off as a Hollywood guy. And at one point, Dax Shepard says the throwaway in the interview of being like, "Yeah, I'd rather make a couple of bad ones and see what happens." And then Tarantino jumps in and goes, "I don't want to make any bad ones. I don't want to make any bad ones."
Right.
And that's when it's like, yeah, you're the real deal. You're the actual real filmmaker, you know?
Yeah. Ugh. They were just all over the map for a second with their dumb.
Their coupling.
Yeah, they were in like commercials and shit for a while too, for like refrigerators and stuff with their weird like.
I get that more than anything because that's a fucking payday, you know.
I know, but I didn't like their fucking camp counselor energy and just. Fucking, it was just like, I'm sick of it. Ugh. Speaking of, and that's another thing that, you know, going back to watching hockey, we've got, hopefully, we're taping this on Wednesday, game 5 happens tonight between Montreal and Tampa Bay. There's like a fucking stage 5 hurricane. Hopefully that doesn't hit Tampa. The game's in Tampa, so hopefully the city and the series survives, are able to play a game, but safety first, obviously. So hopefully
you are just, you're rooting for Tampa, you have told the world, right?
Told the world. I wouldn't say I'm rooting for Tampa. It's more rooting against Montreal, you know, because I'm not necessarily a Tampa Bay fan either. And also, if you've noticed, I'm wearing my lovely birthday present from Mr. Sean.
Yes, I did notice that. Yeah, I thought that was the case.
Absolutely. Yeah, breaking her in.
That means you like the hat.
Absolutely.
All right.
I couldn't find my other one. I'm totally kidding.
I don't think it's a bad hat.
It's great. My other one is so filthy. I was like, let me give this other one a try. It's great. It's called The Colors I Love. I'm breaking in the brim. And
it's like, it's also
the first look of it right here.
It's very subtle. Just says New York on it. Doesn't really. But if you're a Rangers fan, you probably know it's a Rangers hat, you know?
Sure.
And it could probably double as a Giants hat. Let's be honest.
Absolutely. You can wear it to any New York sporting event.
Yeah, absolutely.
We shouldn't go any further without mentioning a passing of a legend.
Yeah.
Richard Donner, everybody. God, just dropping off like flies lately. It's really upsetting. Or getting close to death.
It's so funny because one of the things it reminded me of is, I think I might have brought this up on the show before. Richard Donner was amazing. He did Goonies. The first two Supermans, I believe. Lethal Weapon.
Both, the Omen. Nobody Lethal Weapon 1 and 2. Omen.
I didn't know he did The Omen. Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah, oh, that's he's fantastic.
I think The Omen gets conflated a lot of times with Rosemary's Baby, which is famously Roman Polanski and two little kids. But man, for my dollars to donuts, give me The Omen over Rosemary's Baby any day of the week. I identify little kids with little fucking creepy looks and wearing little suits are the most terrifying thing in the world to me.
Absolutely.
To just watch him. Dude, when I was a young kid and I saw the scene in The Omen where the nanny or the, you know, the maid, whatever, she steps out onto the balcony at the big birthday party. She goes, "It's all for you, Damien," and then fucking hangs herself. I went, that's it. I'm out. I threw my hands in the air and just fucking left.
And he goes, "Check, please."
Yeah. And he's just standing there with that evil look on his face. Perfect casting. They nailed that kid. Yeah. And Rosemary's Baby was just always like a weird fucking trippy kind of thing. It didn't really scare me as much. And it was Omen, a lot of people always surprised here.
Rosemary's Baby, I saw once. But Omen always stuck with me. And I think it's because it's like the little kid thing always does that.
Totally. Did Roman Polanski die too, and we just kind of forgot about it?
Did he die? Well, he was not. I don't know if he did.
He's still alive.
He's not allowed in the in the country. He just avoided his rape charges by just never coming back here.
Right, right, right.
Which I guess if you're not from here, it's like, yeah, what? What? Yeah, that's all right.
Oh, there's here's Richard Donner's directing filmography, X-15, Salt and Pepper, Lola, which.
Hey, I'm Roy.
And I'm Maul.
And we're the hosts of the new Roy and Maul podcast.
That's right.
I know you're probably listening to a podcast that you actually like right now, and we just interrupted it with an ad.
That's all right. We're here.
And I appreciate if you didn't hit the 15-second skip button.
Listen to our show where we cover topics like music, movies,
yes,
TV shows, which we love to binge watch.
Of course. Just lifestyle stuff.
And give out crazy stories about our day-to-day lives.
Yeah.
Check us out on the new Rory Maul podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcast and let us know how you're feeling about our show.
And once you're done listening to this podcast that you actually like, maybe you could check us out.
I don't know if that's the same one as Stanley Kubrick's Lola, based on the book by some Russian guy.
Oh, wow. He did The Toy with Richard Pryor.
Yeah, The Toy was the other one I was going to bring up, which is
Goonies, Lady Hawk with Matthew Broderick. Lethal Weapon, which is fantastic.
Of course. Scrooge.
I didn't know he did Scrooge. I had no clue.
Lethal Weapon 2. Radio Flyer is a nice little throwback. When
how about this? Lethal Weapon 1 or Lethal Weapon 2? Make your pick.
Here, dude, I am admittedly not as well-versed in the Lethal Weapon universe as I should be. I've seen them all maybe like once or twice. But
really?
Yeah, I'm telling
you. Even 2?
I don't even remember what happens in 2.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. What?
Which one's Rene Russo? Buster, you're my age. Lethal Weapon 2, how well do you know it?
I get it confused with things that happen in 1 a lot.
But you know, I've seen it 50 fucking times. I've seen it so many times.
What's so special about 2?
Patsy Kensit's boobs?
I don't remember.
You get to see Patsy Kensit's boobs, and I was like 12, and it was a life changing event.
Well, I thought that was one when the girl threw herself off the balcony.
That's at the beginning of 1, but that's not Patsy
you
Kensit.
You see her boobs though too, right?
Yeah, but that's not Patsy Kensit. She's not a main character in the movie.
I don't even know who's.
Two is way more fun. 1 might be a better like action movie without all like the tropes, but 1 changed what like one is so. Such a pioneer as far as action. Buster, can you try to bring it up? Patsy Kensit's boob. There you go. They don't have the picture there, but you see Patsy Kensit lying down.
I didn't
talk
know
about
was,
like
that big on your list here.
Well, that scene was because I went in the theater with I went to go see this with my dad. So when you're 12,
that's always tough, yeah.
And you go,
fucking more popping like, through your jeans.
Yeah, exactly.
Johnny, get us some popcorn. Not right now.
my little Irish 12-year-old penis just like, huh? Like so confused. But
I'd rather
like,
sitting,
this shouldn't be happening here. This is the movie theater. So it was a really big deal to me to go to Lethal Weapon 2.
Okay, maybe you got an emotional connection there.
Sexual and emotional connection. It's really confusing. But but I'm shocked you didn't see it a bunch. I thought that was that's where diplomatic immunity comes from. You know, one of the greatest deaths ever in an action movie is when he gets the South African. What?
The concept of diplomatic immunity. They go, it wasn't a thing before Lethal Weapon 2. They invented
it. Andy, this is almost as life-changing as Midnight Run. Like,
hold on. It's not that I haven't seen them. It's just that this was the era and the decades of so many of these action movies coming out, and they were just Riggs and Murtaugh were not my guys.
Buster Palm, you know what I'm talking about, diplomatic immunity. One of the greatest lines ever in an action movie.
I don't recall it off
you
the top
think
of my head.
You think that Mel Gibson's like down for the count because the guy from the racist South African guy from the consulate has shot him from above, and he's just like totally done. But then he's killed the other South African guy that killed his wife and killed Patsy Kensit. If you haven't seen Lethal Weapon 2 at this point, I don't care if I'm giving spoilers. So
yeah, seriously.
So what's it called? So the guy, the main guy, he has his gun, the main villain, pointed at Mel Gibson for the final kill shot. And there's this huge like giant, like not even like a safe, like a shipping container, like held up by ropes above, what you call it? Above, oh no, I'm mixing up the scene. I'm so sorry. No. The guy who killed his wife and killed Patsy Kensit, they do this whole drawn out fight, and then he's almost dead. And the guy's standing there, and he's about to throw a knife at Mel Gibson, and he hits the button to have the shipping container come down and crash on the racist South African guy that killed his wife and Patsy Kensit. It's unbelievable. And then the main South African guy shoots him, and then Danny Glover points his gun at the main guy, and the main guy goes, "Diplomatic immunity." And then they shoot him, and then Danny Glover goes, "It's just been revoked." That's what he said. It's one of the best scenes in cinematic history.
Well, if you couldn't follow that, there's something wrong with you.
All right, whatever. I'm bad at telling, recounting things.
I'm the same way.
We can erase this part of the podcast.
Yeah, man. I was just more of a diehard guy, I guess. I don't know why. I think the Lethal Weapons were always a little more graphic for me, and I think those were I had a harder time being able to rent those or trying to sneak away to those in the movies, rated R and stuff like that. So I don't know why. I've seen them all. No, it's not like I haven't seen them. It's been a while.
There he is. This is the scene. Is that the actual scene? Just the screenshot. There he is on the ground, and the guy's shooting him, and he goes, "Watch."
Diplomatic immunity.
It's the best thing ever. Watch.
Boom.
Danny Glover shoots him in the head.
It's just been revoked.
Yes! It's just been revoked. Come on, man. That is...
He did the neck turn. He thought about it. He went...
Dude, it's one of the greatest scenes ever in a movie.
Oh, there they are.
It's so great. Oh, man.
I give it a watch.
You got to give it a watch just for the fun factor. I think you'll be into it because you love movies from that time period anyway. So I think you'll love it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Richard Donner.
Sad. It's a good movie, but it's very like, it's not a funny. It's weird how like wacky the Lethal Weapon movies got as they moved along.
Yeah, they got very sitcom-y. You're right. They were way more like they tried to be. You know why? Because they became PG-13. They went from R to PG-13.
You can't fucking.
You can't do it. You can't do it.
That's always the other thing. Whenever I see a trailer for a horror movie that I get really excited about, because the trailers for horror movies are very easy to make scary, and you go, "Oh, this is gonna be a good one." Then I go, "Rated PG-13." I go, "Well, now I'm out."
Garbage.
Yeah. Let me go to a horror movie. You got to be rated R.
This is the opinion. Horror. Right? Horror.
Yeah, funny.
Let's take it easy. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to say was this. I think I might have brought it up on the show before. Superman 2 versus Superman 1. What would you take?
All right. Now, 2 is... What's the plot of 2?
2 has... It's the
cube people. That's 3.
No, 2 is the cube people. It's Terrence Stamp.
Yeah, yeah.
And the guy who...
Does... One. I like
that. No way. I'd take 2.
I don't like those cube people.
Love those cube people. I think they're such fun villains. I also
what are they called? There's something. They have a name for them.
I forget the name because I haven't seen it in a long time. But I remember 2 more than 1. I saw 1 only a couple of times. 2 used to be on TV all the time. 2 has that great scene in the diner where he doesn't have his powers and he gets beaten up by like the truck driver. And then he's all embarrassed and he's like, whatever. And then the end of the movie, he gets his powers back and he goes back in and completely just like throws the guy down the lunch counter and everybody looks at him and he goes, "I've been," and then puts his hands up
He's
weightlifting and goes, "I've been working out." That's what he does. Fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. General Zod, Ursa, and Nan, the Phantom Zone.
Is that what they're called? The Phantom Zone?
No, that's where you go if you get in one of those cubes. Remember?
You get
trapped in the Phantom Zone.
I forgot it was called that. But General Zod, who was my first experience with Terrence Stamp, and then the guy, the Mike Albanese guy, the guy who looks like Mike Albanese that goes,
Yeah.
He looks like our friend Mike Albanese. Not really. He's just beard and he's a big guy. But the yeah, dude, I Richard Donner, R.I.P. baby. Because there they are. There's Mike. He doesn't look anything like Mike Albanese. I don't know why I just said that.
What is that guy's name? Fuck.
In real life,
Who plays Nan in Superman 2? Hold on, I'm gonna get to the bottom of this.
Get to the bottom of it.
Yeah, no, I want to know because I know that guy's been in other stuff where we're gonna go, oh, that fucking asshole.
Jack O'Halloran.
What else is he in?
I'm not sure. Jack O'Halloran.
I always think of him as just in Superman 2. But before we get out of here, I would like to tell you I saw a couple of movies in the theater this week, Andy.
All right. What do you got?
You can totally tell Andy's looking something up.
He was in nothing else I ever saw.
Well, that's what I was trying to think. I don't know him from anything else.
Maybe in TV show or something.
Maybe you know what he kind of looks like is the guy from Mr. Show who was at the Capitol riot. He, under the beard, he kind of looks like that guy.
He was a professional boxer with not a bad record. 34 wins, 21 losses, 2 draws, 17 knockouts.
Maybe that's why he was known and he was in Superman too. Yeah.
When he was on How Did This Get Made, he talked about how his dad was a mobster.
Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Like an Irish mobster?
Yeah. Something like that. I don't know what.
He ran with the 54th Street Crazies. I don't know.
It was him and Mouse Turner, whatever his name.
Mouse Turner.
Yeah, so I saw a couple of
lay it on me.
Movies. Two very different movies. On the daytime, I saw Peter Rabbit 2.
I see.
Well, I should explain myself. I saw it with Megan and her son Owen, who's 4 years old.
All right, it's okay. Not, there you go.
Yeah, I don't know why you couldn't put that together in your head because
I was kidding, of course.
It wasn't just me, but wasn't me just alone walking up to the ticket booth.
Peter Rabbit 1. Here you go.
No,
you walk in, you put up a fight, you go, "Well, I'm going to be completely lost. I don't know the plot of the first one."
Yeah, I'm not by myself going to the ticket booth, going, "One for Peter Rabbit 2, please."
Peter Rabbit 2, please. In a Peter trench coat.
No, so I saw that, and it was actually funny. Like it's the way that they make these kids movies now. They're like, oh, we're gonna try to make them as entertaining for the adults as they are the kids.
Yes, yes.
And they really do because they do a lot of like winks and nods to like the camera that of shit they know that the kids aren't gonna get. And we went with Owen, and it's funny because I'm like, he's 4, so like, you know, I don't know, maybe like 45 minutes in the movie, he was like up and he was like, you know, we were the only ones in the movie theater, so he got up and he was like roaming around the movie theater and he was really excited.
There's got another runaway over here.
So I saw that, and then I'm really happy to announce that I saw Fast and the Furious 9 at me and our pal Dan St. Germain. We went to go see Fast and the Furious 9, which is probably...
Oh, you're really going to hate me.
I think I already know that you haven't... Have you not seen any of these?
Not one.
Dude. Okay, here's the thing.
I might not even have seen like more than 5 minutes of any of them. Okay. I've obviously seen tons of clips and, you know...
I'm not going to give you shit for not seeing Fast and the Furious movies. Like with things like Midnight Run, because of how much I love it. Yes. Fast and the Furious to me is like, it's such a Rubik's cube of a cinematic experience because we've talked about this in the podcast. I think we have, where we talked about are the filmmakers in on how goofy the fucking movies are and how outlandish it is. Sure. And how corny it is.
Yeah. I'm personally just not going to the theater for those. I'll watch them at home, but yeah,
Wait, so have you seen any of them? You said you haven't seen any of them, though.
No, but I would.
Can you... you know what's a fun experiment, which is really, really... Now that you haven't seen any of them, we're actually at an advantage here. I'd like you to do something for me, if you can.
All right.
Please do this. Only do this. Watch the first one. Mm-hmm. The Fast and the Furious, whatever it's called, the first one, number one. Make sure it's number one.
I believe.
And then go to the movies and watch this one. And then I want to talk about it because
I don't need to bookend them.
No, I'm telling you because you're going to go, what the F is going.
Okay. All
you're
right.
We're going to go, what happened? And then you can go back and watch all of them. It doesn't matter. They're action movies. It doesn't matter.
Imagine if I only saw the first and last one. I go, what happened to Paul Walker? Where is he?
Yeah, you only get your information from the Fast and the Furious movie. Yeah, yeah. But
did
I just want
to ask them.
But based within the movies, I want you to go, how did we get here? How did this happen?
All right, I'll try. I'm not making any promises.
All right. Well, anyway, this very one, they get more and more ridiculous as they go on. This one is basically the Gone with the Wind of Fast and the Furious movies. It is fantastic. It is everything that you want.
Gone with the Wind.
It's like they had a message board where people, and they were like, hey, think of the most ridiculous things we could do in these movies. And they're like, done. We'll do this. Okay, there's one particular thing that I want you to see that I'm not going to mention now that they did that is just chef's kiss. Just unbelievable. Like these movies.
Yeah.
Also the script writing is so bad that you're just standing ovation on bad luck. Me and Saint Germain's were dying laughing in the movie, like dying laughing in the movie theater.
Did they write it like the script doctor, this Hollywood script doctor from Key and Peele? Have you ever seen that sketch?
No.
It's one of the most brilliant sketches in sketch history comedy. It's about the making of Gremlins Part 2, The New Batch, where
I have seen this. I've seen
it. Everybody go watch it. You can Key and Peele's on Hulu, and it's in season 5. Just called this Hollywood script doctor. Jordan Peele comes in, and these guys are all sitting around the table. They're going, all right, guys. So, you know, Gremlins 1 is a big hit. Let's write the sequel. What are we thinking? And they go, yeah, how about it takes place in an office building? He goes, all right, cool. You know, you got the water, what do you call it? Or the water cooler. That might be a thing with the Gremlins. He goes, yeah, okay, cool. And then just this over the top guy comes in. And they start going through every lunatic thing that's in the new batch. And the guy's just going, what if we have a spider gremlin? He goes, it's in the movie. What if we have electricity gremlin? Girl, it's in the movie. It's so fucking funny. And then they just cut to it at the end. They go, every single thing they talked about was in the movie. Like, it's in the actual Gremlins Part 2, the new batch, the movie.
Yeah, that's
maybe they're writing Fast and Furious 9 like that, where they're like, it's in the movie.
I think they probably are. I think they are. And they try to make it work for the universe of the movie. Like, it's like,
I got to watch that sketch now.
It's the kind of, I'm going to check out the sketch again because I've definitely seen it.
It's so just type in script Dr. Key and Peele. It'll come right up on Google and just have a great 5 minutes. But yeah, you had a good run at the movie house there. Peter Rabbit 2, yeah, all sequels for you.
Yeah, all sequels. This weekend I'm going to try to go see Black Widow with Saint Germain as well. That's good. What'd you say?
I don't even know if I know that one.
It's the Scarlett Johansson Marvel movie.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well.
And then also, I think later this summer or maybe the fall, what's coming out is with our friend Kumail Nanjiani, The Eternals.
Ooh,
and I'm hoping that does well for my friend, but I'll tell you, it's when you have a Marvel character that nobody really cares about, or, you know, or a team that your layman, your non Mike Lawrence does not know about.
Right.
When you have that, it's, I don't think going to do as well as the rest of them. I think they should have interjected a known character into the movie. Like, they should have had like Iron Man just come on into one of their meetings and give a wave. Hey guys, just checking in.
I don't know if Iron Man's alive anymore, Shawnee.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying?
There. Somebody even like I know that.
Yes, that is true. That is true. He's not alive anymore. But I've also been seeing articles about how somehow they're bringing
Iron Man.
Time is not linear in these freaking movies.
Death. Life.
Yeah, exactly. They're just like, you had the magic pellet and you came
back.
That's
what I think's not of these things.
So anyway,
one last, what was I gonna say? Gosh darn it, my old dementia brain lost it.
But, your World War II brain.
We talked about it too, but I can't remember the title. It's The Many Saints of Newark. Is that what it's called?
Oh yeah. Many Saints of Newark, A Sopranos Story, it's called.
A Sopranos Story.
And I saw a thing online about somebody was questioning they have Silvio in the trailer, apparently, in one of the still photos. Like, they had a screenshot from the trailer, but he looks already like he's kind of balding. So they're like, how much older in the show is Silvio supposed to be from Tony? And I think it's pretty substantial. I don't think it's just a couple of years. I think he's supposed to be like 10, 15 years older than Tony, right?
I don't know if it's that much. He's a young, virile guy. I mean, Carmelo wants his sausage in the show, you know?
No, you're talking about...
I'm thinking of Furio.
Yeah,
sorry,
no, Silvio. Little Stevie.
With all that makeup, who knows how old he is, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. And he has the wig.
Van Zandt playing it? It's Silvio Dante as we know him?
And I think in real life, he's only 12 years older than Gandolfini or something, but that doesn't matter for movies. You know, they do him up to make him look like he's 60 in the thing. And Tony's probably supposed to be, it's pretty substantial. Tony's probably supposed to be like, 42 in the beginning, maybe even.
Oh, geez, I have a real bad feeling about this movie.
Oh, there he is. There's Silvio.
Oh, come on.
Oh, so maybe he is younger.
That's the worst screenshot I've ever seen in my life.
Also, it's a little bit ridiculous to have him wearing the same suits back then that he's wearing in modern day. Like, I think he would have aged into those suits, don't you think? Maybe, or maybe not. Maybe the mafia guys wear those suits.
Zarno is known for their taste.
But he's wearing, to give you a context, he's wearing this black suit, red shirt, white tie, and he's doing the a little bit hunched over with a point.
Looks like a fat Sean Penn trying to be Italian.
So, yeah, man, why don't you make your predictions? What do you think? Many Saints to Newark. I'm excited.
I'm excited, but I'm nervous that it's going to be a caricature.
How about this? Besides what it actually is, as far as the movie goes, bomb or it'll do well?
Just because it's hard, numbers?
Box office numbers, yeah. Because it's hard for these movies to do well now, even when they are attached to a property like that.
I think it's going to middle. I think I'm going to push here. I don't think it's going to bomb, but I don't think it's going to be a blockbuster.
Yeah, I think you're right.
You know, middle of the road.
And I think, I'm hoping
diehard fans will go, but like, it's such, I don't think people are super stoked like we are. Like the general masses are going to rush to the theater, you know?
Yeah.
I think it'll make okay money. I don't think it'll be a number one over a weekend or anything.
Also, if you look at the trailer, it makes it look like it's like the Tony Soprano story, right? Like Tony Soprano Origins, whatever. But I think they might be doing that for promotion's sake, because if you think about it, the TV show, they had multiple storylines going on. So you'll probably see that in this. It'll be the Tony thing might be the main one, but I'm sure they'll try to like something you never heard of happens in the movie. So to give it like that credibility, that's not just Muppet Babies with Tony Soprano, you know?
Well, another fun one, Shawnee.
Andy's done, everybody.
We had nowhere else to go.
I know, you had nowhere else to go. I got nowhere to go. I got nowhere to go. But you can tell the people we're going to be doing another Soul Joel gig together.
Oh, that's right.
This month. We can start promoting it now. Come on out to Jersey, folks.
In 2 weeks. Christ, the time goes by quickly, doesn't it?
Yep.
You forget when you were a little kid, summer just seemed like it lasted forever. And now you're going, well, it's the end of summer in 4 days, essentially.
Yeah. It goes fast.
I just realized I wrote something wrong in my calendar here. Looking at it, I wrote something a week off. And as much as I rely on this thing, that would have fucked me up. Yes, July 22nd. I don't know the venue, but it's in Ventnor, New Jersey. So
we'll get to the venue.
SoulJoelComedy.com. Should have all the information there. But yeah, if you're in the, I'll even throw the Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Atlantic City area out. We will be down there on that date. I'll be at Mohegan Sun the week after, and I'll be in Stone Harbor on August 15th. So I got a lot of Jersey Shore stuff coming up.
The week after, I will be at the House of Comedy in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Yeah. That's at the Mall of America. So make sure you come check that out. And I'm going to be, I have a gig let me see. The day that this episode comes out, I'll be in Berkshires, but I don't know where. The Berkshires. So follow my social media. I'm at Shawnee Time on Instagram and Twitter. And also follow my friend, the old Jello over here. Follow him. It's at Andy Fiore on Instagram and Twitter. And follow Buster Palm himself, the guy who knows about Lethal Weapon 2. He is at Mike V. Suarez. Follow us. Follow the show. That's probably the most important. Let's get some followers out of this here at the DYM podcast on Instagram and Twitter. I've been posting these clips to my TikTok. That's at ShawneeTime TikTok. And guys, message us. Let us know what you think of the show. We're very excited with these episodes, and we've been having a lot of fun. And we can't thank you enough. Thank you to the Laugh Button. That's at the Laugh Button on the same social medias. And we will see you next week. Right, Andy?
That's right, sir. Talk to you guys then. Talk to you guys then. I mush mouthed it at the end. I'm done.
He's drunk. Bye-bye.
I'm not sitting.